It's our distinct pleasure to be joined by the former host of, oh God, I don't have long enough to list all the shows.
Well, we only have 20 minutes.
No, I got 59 minutes, but I still don't have enough time. Here's Keith Olbermann. Mr. Olbermann, how are you?
Bob, nice to talk to you. Hello, John. How are you?
Good, Keith.
It's nice of you. Nice of me to be able to introduce you two guys in a more formal environment. You've never been in the same room together, but apparently, Olbermann, you and Shannon are pen pals now. Is that right?
It's pretty close.
Yeah, Twitter is a wonderful thing. I have people whose work I admire, who I'm not likely to run into here on the streets of New York, are accessible within seconds. It's what a world we live in, gentlemen.
It's the one key thing I think that Keith and I have in common is our love of hockey minutia, and so we tend to get off on rants and discussion points about expansion and hockey in the 30s, hockey in the 50s, and what it was like to be at the old Madison Square Garden, right?
Exactly how long the Philadelphia Quakers lasted and things like that. Yeah. I was at the old Garden, but not for a game. I went to the Garden. I was so young when the old Garden closed. All I saw in it was the circus. However, I am old enough to have gone to an NHL game in the Garden's second full year of operation. So I'm old enough. And you just mentioned John Brophy. I mean, I remember John Brophy of the Long Island Ducks.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And then much later on, to me, it's still one of the more remarkable things I ever saw in sports. When he was coaching in the league, did he not, at the point where his hair was the whitest and he looked the most like the underdog cartoon character Simon Bar Sinister, when he had that full white fro going, did he not get hit by a puck
in Montreal
in the head?
Yeah.
And he was bleeding bright red through the white hair, and he just kept on coaching with the blood gradually saturating. My memory is of every time they would do the cutaway. We showed these on the highlights. I would have been doing the local news in L.A., and each time they cut to him, he was a little redder and a little less white. It was just extraordinary. I mean, playing hurt, my goodness, he's bleeding up there.
Brophy always reminded me of Spencer Tracy in The Old Man and the Sea. And I guess just the white hair and kind of, well, halfway disheveled look that he had. What's your history as a hockey fan? How did you get interested in the sport?
My uncle, Uncle Willie, who was actually my mother's uncle, attended both, and I'd like to emphasize this, there were only two home games for the 1940 Rangers in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Mm.
And he used to talk fondly of John Ross Roach, a goaltender of the 20s and 30s who was briefly with the Rangers and briefly the Ranger goalie. And he had taken my mother to games, and he was the sports historian in my family. And I can't remember exactly what drew me to it, but I do know that maybe the second thing I ever wrote about sports was for the fourth grade newspaper. And it was about, this is as telling a statistic as you will find on this topic, I think. It was about the Toronto Maple Leafs winning the Stanley Cup in 1967 when I was in the fourth grade. One of
Very
the
good.
First things I ever wrote about sports. And then they showed the games on TV, and there wasn't a lot on TV.
Right.
As many fans have gotten hooked in that way. And I started to listen to the Rangers on the radio. Marv Albert was the Rangers radio man, great radio hockey man. It was just tremendously exciting. Great teams, and Eddie Jockman in goal. And I started to go in 1969. And the first game to this day, I can remember my disappointment because the first or second game I ever saw in person, the Blues were in. And I knew that meant that I was going to see either Jacques Plante or Glenn Hall.
Right.
And I mean, for days, it was, I'm going to see Jacques Plante. And I knew the whole story, and I'd seen him on TV. Or Hall, if he thought, I'm going to see Hall, Ernie Wakely.
No.
To this day, I'm nothing against Ernie Wakely, but to this day, I feel ripped off. So that was where I became a fan then and remained such. I wavered a little bit after the lockouts, both on frustration and principal levels, and I found myself recapturing my exuberance as a fan in the last certainly 5-10 years, and it's the last thing I mean, it's the last sporting event I can go to, you know, wearing a shirt, wearing a jersey and root. And I stood there last year. I think I missed one Ranger home playoff game and stood there and agonized with them. And come to think of it, this year I only missed one Ranger home playoff game as well. So it's been, I'm a Ranger fan, therefore I'm long suffering, but Ranger fans know you are not allowed to leave. The only way out is death.
Let me remind you, 1994 is not near as far away as 1967. So yeah, don't talk about long suffering.
Yeah, no, I know. I shouldn't point that out. I was at one of the final games in 79, and I saw one of the wins against Vancouver in 94 with a friend of mine who was probably the last guy you would presume was a hockey fan, Wally Joyner, the former American League first baseman with the Angels in Kansas City, native of Atlanta. I was shocked. I mean, he was with the Angels, and I was a rookie sportscaster in L.A. And I said, "How are you a hockey fan? You're a real Southerner from Atlanta." He said, "He grew up living next door to the guy who won the name the team contest for the Atlanta Flames." So he became a hockey fan at whatever, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. And Wally and I went to a game of the finals in '94. And you know, there's a lot of tremendous memories. And I also, I went to Cornell. So two or three of my classmates, and including one fairly good friend of mine, became NHL players. A fellow named Lance Nethery, who played a year for the Rangers.
I remember him.
Great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he became a star in Germany.
You and the commissioner are the same alma mater.
Yes, well, I try to play that down. What is fascinating is, of course, the commissioner of Major League Baseball is also from Cornell and was there when Bettman was a law student. He was there before I was there, right before, like the year before. But Rob Manfred was class of 1980 and I was class of 79. So the likelihood that we ran into each other or were in a class together is not bad. But so I was at Cornell. And then in my first job in broadcasting as a professional, I worked for Sam Rosen, who was now the voice of the New York Rangers.
Right.
He was my boss, and Sam and I covered for United Press International's radio network. Wow. We covered the 1980 Olympics. And my assignment originally, because Sam knew it wasn't going to be much of a tournament for the United States, my assignment, just turned 21, was to cover the U.S. hockey team. And, of course, after they won the first few games, Sam joined me in the coverage.
Oh, I'm shocked.
Yeah. But he'd already done NHL play-by-play. I couldn't really – and he was my boss. I really couldn't complain. But so we both covered it, and I was therefore given this incredibly difficult task of getting the free seat, the ticket. He sat in the press box for the two big games, for the Russian game and the gold medal game. And I covered the crowd. So my entire responsibility was to sit at basically 30 rows up from center ice at the Olympic Auditorium in Lake Placid, and then go out a couple of seconds beforehand and interview fans chanting USA in the crowd outside. So I have my standing with the National Hockey League and international hockey is pretty long standing.
Baseball or hockey? What would you put at your top of your list? Baseball as a business and hockey as a fan?
Well, honestly, beware of increasing replay. Baseball with replay is beginning to lose me, and I never thought I'd say that out loud. Mm. But the fact that eventually we will be using microscopes to determine whether or not Bartolo Colon's left cheek actually touched second base or went over it by 1/10,000th of an inch. This is where we're headed to this. We're going down to the level that football or even the NBA is doing, where it's lost the original intent of what replay was supposed to show, to the point I'm in favor of getting rid of replay altogether. And as I think I mentioned, I can't remember who I told this to. I think the NHL, and I can't remember when it was really done, I thought the greatest, most important, most exciting rule change in the last 25 years in any sport was enacted by the NHL and is barely recognized today. And that was the virtual elimination of freezing the puck against the boards. Mm-hmm. Because you now have uninterrupted action, and it's no longer, you know, we're breaking into your tonight's exciting edition of Perry Mason to tell you that there were 7 uninterrupted minutes of action in a sporting event. It's every night. Even in the playoffs, it's fantastic. It makes the NBA look like dripping molasses by comparison, and baseball is now moving towards this. So I begin to wonder, as a born and bred baseball fan, if I'm not, in fact, a born and bred hockey fan whose hockeyness is overcoming his baseballness.
Dare I remind you, we had a 6-minute video review last night in the Tampa-Pittsburgh game?
Well, all right, but you had, I mean, how many of them did you have?
Oh, no, just one.
Wait. Sorry, but I'm saying, if it's manageable and if it's in the playoffs and it's decisive, I think you can handle it. But unfortunately, it is the genie and the bottle. There's no way to stop it, because once it happens, it's going to continue to happen and get more sophisticated and more time consuming. And it is a danger. I don't think we'll ever go back to no replays, but if I had a choice of only those two extremes, I would go with no replays, because it's killing baseball, particularly. I mean, if you're at home, you can get up and do something. But in baseball, it's this. Ron Darling, the great Yale-educated Mets announcer, said it perfectly. You see this extraordinary play. A stadium rises up and seeing the perfect mathematics of the game. And this could apply to hockey as easily as baseball. And then you see this happen, and you're on your feet. And then you go, now, let's spend 5 minutes determining whether or not it was a mirage. And just suck the air out of the whole process. And I worry to some degree that might happen in the NHL.
Well,
but it hasn't yet, but it has in baseball.
With Keith Olbermann, you know, 2 days ago, I took a phone call from a fan, and it's interesting you brought this topic up, Keith, because fans said to me, why on earth do we not use replay instead of home plate umpires to call balls and strikes? Given, you know, if you watch on television, you get the little box in the top corner. And the perception is that is accurate, and that many calls are missed. And there's some truth to that. And technologically, we could probably be there right now if we really wanted to be. And it's hard for me to say, this is why you won't see it happen. I don't know if you won't.
I think you will. I mean, I don't know that anybody actually would have said 40 years ago that tennis would be ruled entirely by electronic beeps indicating whether the ball was in or out.
Yeah.
And you know, there is an argument to be made that of all the things you'd like to have done automatically, balls and strikes might make the most sense. And you could eliminate a whole facet of time wasting in the game by permitting that. I think that's sensors and technological improvements in that way in all sports. I don't think it's ruined tennis by any stretch of the imagination. Perhaps you could argue that the life has been lost because there isn't a John McEnroe having a near nervous breakdown on every call that goes against him. But there is also something to be said for that might actually hasten the pace of a baseball game, and it might be applicable in hockey or other sports too. But I think that's almost a separate issue from going back and, as I said, you know, we will be using microscopes eventually, and you can see it almost on there. Now you can see on the offsides call. That's the future. And if you can't make the first thing is to save it in any sport, you have to have a time limit. And perhaps the best way is to let the referee or the umpire, depending on which game it is, let them choose, eliminate the coach's challenge, just let them go and say, okay, I'm not sure I want to see it again. Leave it in their hands. And give them essentially a reward every time they go and use it, because then they'll be, you know, skeptical of that they saw everything, but not, you know, there won't be an ego involved in it. In other words, but this way lies madness. So it's a very odd answer to the question: am I a baseball guy or a hockey guy? But there it is.
Another baseball question we got into the other day, and it is topical, and it's not one that you're unfamiliar with, and that is minorities as managers in Major League Baseball. We have 2 African-American managers. We had 1 Latino who was fired in Atlanta, who, along with his primary assistant, Carlos Tosca. And we addressed the question, all right, how do you fix this? If we perceive there is a problem here, and most people suggest something's going on, whether it's a problem or not remains to be seen. Do you have any thoughts on what you can do? Clearly, mandating Latino interviews for managerial positions or African Americans to be interviewed is perceived as a scam and not real.
Yeah.
Is there an answer?
I don't know, because I think largely what the reason there seems to have been some backing up in this topic in baseball. It's a part of the law of unintended consequences. We are, as much as sports writers, broadcasters, even some fans resist metrics and sabermetrics and analytics and all of that,
mm-hmm.
the game has clearly embraced it. And what you're now looking for in your average general manager is somebody who can do an adequate job of the eye test on any given player or the negotiation test with any other general manager, but principally can handle analytics and statistics and can provide you with a cost-benefit analysis of getting a third baseman of a particular, you know, name or origin. But the problem is, literally, I think two of these guys are from Cornell, or maybe it's three, and they tend to be pasty white guys. And necessarily, these pasty white general managers are going to have, from their field of experience in baseball, their experience is going to be other pasty white guys. And so we now knock this process back, which I think, after some obvious delay in baseball coming to the realization that Al Campanis and people who thought like him should not be making these decisions, I think they were making progress towards a nice balance and an appropriate position where every job was judged on who was best for the job, and there were enough minority candidates that you got a good percentage of minority managers. But now you have these new general managers who don't know any of these people, who don't know
right.
who's been in the organization for 30 years, who wouldn't know Lloyd McClendon if they didn't have a statistic on how often he changed pitchers. And that's your problem. And I don't know how you overcome that other than the proverbial sensitivity training. I don't know what you could mandate, because I think your point about the interviews is I think completely right. It's a scam in all sports.
This is the longest interview you've gone without talking about Donald Trump, so we won't let you talk about him.
Well, how's it? Are you got condo listed?
Almost. We believe it's very close to sale. I'll know in the morning.
You're not moving into another Trump condo, are you?
No, I moved out already. I'm
okay, good.
The financial hit. I had to get out with my soul before it got sucked into the vortex of Castle Trumpula, which I can see out my new window as I speak to you now, glowing in the distance.
Uh-oh.
With evil. Okay, so you said you opened the door, John.
I know.
Well, there's plenty of construction happening here in Toronto in anticipation of a flood of Americans wishing to move to Canada if Trump is elected president. So you're welcome.
Am I not calling the line that allows me to apply for the equivalent of a green card? Is that
100%?
Okay, that's what the interview is for. Okay,
that's exactly what this is all about. And you're welcome. Thanks very much for taking some time for us. We enjoyed it greatly, and somewhere down the road, we'd love to talk to you again. Thanks, Keith.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, John.
All right, boy.
Keith Olbermann, former host of Olbermann on ESPN and SportsCenter and a whole bunch of other stuff.